listening to New England Public Radio News. I'm Adam Frenier, and this is The Shortlist, NEPR's Week in Review. Joining us today are Kristen Palpini, editor of The Valley Advocate, and Ron Chmielis, columnist with the Republican newspaper. Welcome to you both.
Hello.
Thank you.
We start this week in Connecticut, where a bill allowing a third casino in East Windsor now sits on Governor Daniel Malloy's desk after the House gave its approval this week. The gambling facility will be a partnership between the operators of Mohegan Sun and Foxwoods, Connecticut's two other casinos. It will be located about 15 miles from the MGM Springfield project. MGM has criticized the plan, saying a more open process should have been used to award it. The Speaker of the Connecticut House, Joe Arasimowitz, says he doesn't see where MGM has grounds for legal action because of its deal in Springfield.
We believe that MGM doesn't have the ability to sue because part of their agreement was within 60 miles, they can't bid on it anyway. So even if it was an open process, and to be able to sue, you have to be, quote, an injured party or affected party. I don't know that they are.
Now, Ron, is the real story here the fact MGM will likely have competition right down 91 from it?
Well, of course, that's a real story. That's as obvious as it can be. MGM said at the very beginning they would not just be a gambling facility, they would be a full-sized entertainment center. That was one of their selling points. And that will be put to the test, how unique the Springfield facility will be. Because I agree, they don't really have a leg to stand on. As a Springfield person, I'm not happy about it. They're not happy. But they can do what they want in Connecticut, and MGM is going to have to adjust to that.
And the East Windsor facility would be a so-called satellite facility without a lot of the bells and whistles and hotel and resort things that go along with the Springfield project. Kristen, the East Windsor project would be the seventh casino-like facility within a two-hour drive of Springfield. Should MGM or even the tribes in Connecticut be worried that the market might become oversaturated here?
They absolutely should, but and I think they are. But I think they're all banking on, you know, be there first, get in, get the money, and fizzle out as it happens, you know. But Springfield, I think, saw this coming. Connecticut was not going to let this go without a fight. They've been in the business gambling for a long time.
Meanwhile, the long saga of the Housatonic River cleanup in Berkshire County added another chapter or two this week. An EPA panel in Washington heard the appeals on the case. General Electric polluted the Housatonic River decades ago with PCBs when it ran a factory in Pittsfield. This week, they debated the cost and where to put the polluted soil. Kristen, even if the EPA's plan started tomorrow, it's expected to take 13 years, not accounting for any more legal challenges. Do residents in Berkshire County have a right to be frustrated over how long this has taken? And we're talking literally decades, you chronicled in The Advocate several months ago.
Yes, right. Yeah, we have it was a November issue. We've got a long timeline that goes back to the 60s, citing when General Electric first started dumping PCBs and knew about it and did nothing. And we have time after time after time again of the EPA trying to get General Electric's cleanup, General Electric's looking like they were going to do it, waiting to the last minute and pulling back and making a challenge. And so this is just a continuation of that. People absolutely should be furious.
And this is, of course, the second phase of the cleanup. The first phase was done. But, yeah, you know, we're talking about perhaps a generation here that may not even see the river cleaned up. What do you think about that?
I mean, absolutely. That's just not acceptable. Leaving this, the longer you leave contaminants in the ground, I mean, the harder it gets to come out, the harder it gets to purify anything that's around it and protecting the animals and the people in the area.
And, Ron, there was a whole other wrinkle this week added to this, or last week, I should say, when a directive came to light from the new EPA chief, Scott Pruitt, that said that it might try to delay the whole process longer in order to reopen negotiations with GE, and local towns and environmentalists strongly opposed that. And it didn't actually come up during the more than six-hour hearing on Thursday. Should the residents of Berkshire County be concerned about the possibility of the Trump administration looking for a compromise?
Oh, I'm shocked that the Trump administration isn't taking the lead environmentally on this. This is the news of the day. If anything happens during the next 4 years, I think we have to take some satisfaction. But as Kristen, she's the expert on this, not me. This is really sad that we're passing down talk about nostalgia. We have nostalgia about pollution now. We're passing it to our children, to our grandchildren. I just hope the EPA does not get in the way. That's my hope right now.
It's insane to reopen it at this point. Everything has been settled. Everything has been debated to death. It's over. Let's just do it.
Also this week, the Massachusetts legislature heard testimony in a bill which would ban Native American mascots at the state's public schools. But the Senate president in Massachusetts, Dan Rosenberg, tells WGBH he's against the legislation.
It should be a matter of local decision. One of my communities just went through this debate, and it's really about local standard.
It sounds like he's referring there to Turner's Falls High School, which did away with its mascot, the Indians, this year. Kristen, what do you think of Rosenberg's opinion?
I was really surprised by it, actually. I know Stan is very much in favor of strong communities and them having governance over what they do. But taking somebody's culture, putting it on your back, and fighting other mascots with it on you is not acceptable.
Ron, how about the idea of the state stepping in and perhaps telling school districts and communities what to do in this case? Does it cross a line?
Well, with all due respect, I agree with Rosenberg. I think this is a local issue. I'm not for symbols or mascots bother Native Americans many times more than the name itself, a dancing Indian on the side. But I do think that local communities should deal with this. There are different versions of this. Some people say warriors is offensive. Some people say it's not. I don't see this as a state issue. I do see it as an issue. I'd like to see all these nicknames eliminated, but I do think it's better done locally. I agree with that.
I don't think it'll ever really happen locally. I think it'll take too long, and we're talking about a people who suffered genocide in this country. Let's give it to them and just get rid of those names.
Also this week, Red Sox broadcaster Jerry Remy caused a stir, saying interpreters should not be used during games when pitching coaches go to the mound for a conference. He said foreign-speaking players should, quote, learn baseball language. Ron, you covered the Red Sox for many, many years. What do you think?
Well, most baseball language I've heard this week from Boston is swearing at the reporters. I'm not sure that's what they're talking about. No, the most amazing part of this Remy story to me was that he even noticed it was going on. I did cover baseball, and when this translator rule was put in, nobody cared. Nobody cares now. This guy's from Japan. He's in the United States. He doesn't understand what the coach is saying. What is the problem? And Remy caused a controversy where there really was none, and there are questions about whether even his apology was really sincere. This is, in the lexicon of the day, a nothing burger, and Remy should have kept it that way.
Kristen?
I agree. I think this is a very bizarre thing that he said, probably in a moment of desperation to fill the air, and he should just say sorry and really mean it and move on.
All right, Kristen Palpini, editor with the Valley Advocate, and Ron Chmielis, columnist with the Republican newspaper. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And thank you, our listeners, for tuning into The Shortlist, NEPR's Week in Review. And remember, you can catch The Shortlist at any time by subscribing on Apple Podcasts or going to nepr.net/podcast. I'm Adam Frenier, and this is New England Public Radio.